Hey there, good listeners and chat folk. This is Craig and Tempest coming to you live December 12th, 2013 on the Truth Frequency Network. We're very excited about tonight's broadcast, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Tempest and we'll get started. How you doing there, buddy?
Not too bad. G'day to everyone who's listening to us, wherever you are in time and space. Quick g'day to the chat room. G'day, Monarch, and who else we got in there today? Zavrock, Yogamar, and a couple of Anons. Good to see you here. Thanks, folks. Had a really interesting storm here last night, a massive, massive electrical storm, the biggest I've ever seen in my life. And the reason I brought that up was it was just amazing to see that kind of power up in the sky above me. And it just made me think about these powers that should not be, or whatever you want to call them. I looked at it like they were, say, like a three-year-old child taking a swing at a heavyweight boxer. It made me giggle a bit. You know, just seeing that raw energy up there in the sky and listening to those huge cracks of rolling thunder, and you think, well, you know, no matter what we try and do here, that thing is still one awesome force. So we've got a really special friend joining us tonight. He's another fellow Australian. He's an activist, a thinker, a broadcaster, a filmmaker, and I hope I'm not overextending when I say a George Carlin fan, but then again, who isn't? And he's an all-round good guy, so welcome to the broadcast, Max Egan.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for joining us, Max.
And Max has just got back in from Peru, where he's been helping to save the Amazon rainforest, and it's a very, what sounds to be like a very simple idea, but it's absolutely brilliant in my opinion. And do you want to talk a bit more about that, Max?
Yeah, well, it was a really interesting time over there. I got to go into the jungle and see what's really going on, and it was quite disturbing. What's happening is a lot of clear felling that's happening over there, and I want to sort of bring attention to that. And I intend to make a documentary. I went over there actually to film footage for a new documentary I intend to release early next year. And part of that documentary will be dedicated to exposing what's going on in the Amazon, and also hopefully creating a fund whereby we can start saving large sections of it, but also to empower communities around the planet. I think that the Amazon is simply a symptom of a larger problem. It's something that we can all see right before our eyes, and it's something that we can work to make a difference at. So that's why I decided to focus the film on the Amazon, because I think, you know, if we can save little sections of the Amazon and hopefully bigger sections and hopefully all of it eventually, then it will empower people. It will provide some sort of a something they can get their teeth into, something that will empower them and help them realize what we can achieve if we apply ourselves, because we've got some pretty major problems on this planet. And I think all of them exist because of the disempowered state of the community. So that's what I'm trying to do with this film, and that's what the whole Amazon trip is all about.
And we need the Amazon so we can breathe, the lungs of the earth, so to speak. I think it is paramount that the Amazon's rescued, Max, and I love what you're doing. I mean, it's this very simple idea. Let's just buy it back and make it our own.
Well, we've got to sort of control it in some way. We can't expect governments to do it. I mean, governments are in control of it at the moment, and it's causing massive destruction. We've got a lot of illegal clear felling that's going on in the Amazon, and the tribes that live there are powerless to do anything about it because they don't have any real claim to the land. It may be their traditional lands, but they don't have any deed of title or anything to that. So I want to create a foundation whereby we can find certain tribal lands. For example, the Huey Toto people I was just talking with when I was over there, we could get all of their tribal traditional lands and we could buy them, put them in the umbrella of this foundation that I want to create and this trust that I want to set up. And then we can appoint them as the custodians of that land. So they still have their traditional lands. I don't want their lands, and nobody wants their lands. We just don't want the corporations to get it. So I'm trying to figure out a mechanism by which we can make this happen, because there are a lot of groups out there that claim to be working to save the Amazon, but they're not really doing anything. They're creating expensive ad campaigns and nice movies and nice little, announcements, but they're not really doing anything to save the jungle or save the actual land. My plan is to empower the people there, you know.
I was just going to say they're printing out flyers to help save the rainforest and...
Yeah, very often they're using rainforest timber to do it. Yeah, exactly. So they're not really doing anything to save the land at all. They're just collecting a lot of wages for themselves. I figure if I can create this foundation and I'm one of the administrators of it, there'll only be a couple of administrators, so there aren't any wages to pay. There's nothing like that that goes on with it. It'll be simply used to buy up vast sections of forest and to hold them in trust for the traditional people, you know.
That's the way it was intended.
Max, have you worked with any other groups down there, or are you just working solely as an individual on this project?
Well, I've been started off as an individual, but I'm sort of working with groups as well. I'm meeting groups along the way. And the last trip, I met groups along the way. There was a group, I can't remember their name. I've got their pamphlet somewhere. It's slipped my mind to have any relevant information here handy, but... I did meet one group at the airport on the way. There's another group in Peru as well. There's a couple of retreats that are working in Peru to do the similar thing to what I'm doing. So I want to bring them under the umbrella of the organization as well and try to unite everybody that I can. I mean, ultimately, the Amazon is just one small part of what I want to do. I mean, it's big and it's a big mission. But really, I mean, I think we can do it a piece at a time and it will serve to empower people. But what I really want to do is create some sort of a template or a platform that people can use in their local community whereby they can take on their local council, take on their local government, start pushing the envelope with these people and empowering their local community into action to rein these public servants back under control. Because ultimately that's the biggest problem that we face on this planet. Even with the destruction of the Amazon, this is because of out-of-control public servants that remain out of control because of the disempowered state of the community. And this is the same in every country around the planet. Doesn't matter what problem that we're facing, most of the real problems that we see, like in as much as environmental degradation or pollution or homelessness or any of this sort of stuff, most of these things are the result of the actions of corporations. And all of these corporations are able to do this because of legislation that's put in place by governments, and the governments are able to put this legislation in place because we have divided and disempowered communities. So that's where the focus has to be. The focus has to be on empowering and uniting the community, putting common unity back in the community, starting to help retrain people and reorient them into a state of respect for each other, respect for themselves and respect for each other, because once you truly respect yourself, I believe that respect for others comes by default. You realize that you don't have to start profiting from people. You don't have to spend your life pursuing economic gains. You can spend your life pursuing humanitarian gains and humanitarian goals and living your life in a completely different way to what most people do. And this is what I want to try to do, just help to reorient people and re-empower people. Because we've got to rein our governments in. We can't allow the world to continue to be destroyed the way it is. We can't allow things like coal seam gas mining to continue. We can't allow the continuation of fluoride in our water supply and all the things these people are doing. And they're getting away with it all because we're disempowered. You know, we believe we can vote people in and vote people out and petition these people. It's all fiction. We can't do any of it like that. We'll never solve the problem by using the parameters that are put there by the system for us to use, because these parameters are put there in order to sustain the system, not to give us remedy. The remedy is for us to rediscover ourselves and to stand as a united community and simply take the world in a new direction. You know, we don't have to ask these people what to do. We need to dictate policy to them because they are our servants. We've just forgotten that.
Absolutely agree with that, Max. That's what Craig and I started this very broadcast up to do, is to get the power back into people's hands at a grassroots level. And I don't like using catchphrases like that, but it really is. It's back here where you matter the most. And it's good to do stuff overseas. It's good to have this internet connection where we can meet people like-minded all over the world and talk about it. But at the same time, you can't go and forget about what's going on in your backyard or in your local area.
And well, very much. It's the same. It's the same all over the planet. The grassroots, yeah, but it's the same all over the planet. Even with this Amazon thing that I'm doing, mean, ultimately, I want to empower the people here in Australia, but I want to do the people in America and England and everywhere else as well, because it's a global issue. You know, there's one global family here. Put down all this national stuff that we've got with each other and realize that we're all in the same boat, and we need to pay attention and we need to do something about it, you know?
Well, it just seems to me that, like, the hardest hit communities around the globe have been the indigenous tribes everywhere. And just using this project as you're working your way through it, it seems like there's so many lessons that we could extend outward into the globe, into tribal communities and indigenous communities, and really have a fresh look at how we can support these communities and keep them thriving. Because I know here in the States, it seems like these reservations are constantly under attack from the government. And if we can bring in some new ideas to help them strengthen their communities, then I mean, I just think we need that fresh look and fresh perspective that you're trying to find in the rainforest.
Well, we do, and it's very important that those in the West who are in the know, to use another catchphrase, but those who really do realize what's going on, connect with these indigenous cultures and these indigenous communities. What I've done out there with the Hui Toto people is attempt to connect with the elders, because the elders of the Hui Toto know the problems that they're facing. They've actually got a school there, and they're re-educating the children in the school to think in a manner of preservation of the rainforest. They've got singing lessons. Like, they were very excited when we came to film their little village and to go into the jungle with them, and the children got up and sang us a song at the school. And the song actually sounded like Frère Jacques, but they changed the words, and the words are actually about all the local animals and the local trees and all about nature. So they're helping re-educate people into this way of thinking. And it's very, very important that those in the know in the West go and help these tribal cultures understand the price that comes with technology. And because all of these cultures want technology, they say, well, look, you're coming here now telling us not to expand and become like New York, but you've already got all that stuff. You've got your plasma screen TVs and your video games and all the things, and now you're telling us we can't have that. And I can see their point. So what I try to say to them is, no, well, you can have that. But what I'm trying to tell you is that the Western culture has, because it's based on capitalist principles, then we've always got to make things to break. So we have this economic model ever turning over. We don't make things to be sustainable, which means we harvest resources from the planet and we turn them into rubbish very, very quickly. That's all we're doing. And this is called being advanced and having technology. We could make the technology to last. And that's what you people need to think about. Because what's happening with these cultures is that they're being completely trashed. I mean, if you go to Peru, the whole the pop culture in Peru is 25 to 30 years behind what the West is now. Even if you go there and look at the logos and the monuments, and you've got these big boom boxes with big flashy buttons and things, the sort of stuff we had in the 70s. Batman insignia and Transformers and things like this are really big, the stuff we had in the 70s. It's like they offloaded all of the merchandise that we didn't buy onto these third world countries, and now that's the pop culture that is prevalent in these countries. And they're in the same position that we were in back in the 70s, when we thought we could just throw rubbish everywhere and it was all going to break down and everything's good, it doesn't matter, it's a throwaway society. Well, that's the way these cultures are now. And you go there and you tell them, look, perhaps you should bring your buckets of water from the river to your motorbike rather than taking your motorbike into the river and washing the oil off it in the river. And they say, oh, you crazy gringo, you know. It's much more practical to just wheel the bike into the river and wash it here. They don't understand that the soap and the oil and all this stuff does damage. They just don't know. They are not educated in this. So it's very important that we educate them the price that comes with modern technology and the need to make this technology sustainable. We don't need to make things to break. We don't need to base all of our existence on supporting an economic model, which is essentially fiction and is turning the entire planet into one big rubbish tip. That's the problem. And that's the sort of state that these countries are in at the moment. And because the way wealth is moved around the planet, now they're moving all the wealth into these third world countries, and these third world countries are really, really expanding as the first world is being impoverished. You know, they're moving the center of power over to the third world, the center of wealth over to the third world at the moment. Because this will disconnect people very quickly from their family ties, from their connection to the earth. You'll get them locked into the economic model, you'll get them locked into trinkets and technology, and over three generations they'll completely lose their connection to each other. And then you can turn them back into the fourth world, which is what they intend to do with the first world. So, you know, it's really important that we do get involved in it and we see what's going on here and we see the necessity to create a future that is really sustainable for these people, because we can't lose this culture. If we lose the third world and we lose the connection that these people still have to the planet, it will be gone forever. There's no way we will get this back. There's no way we'll get the medicines that are found in the Amazon back. And that's another thing that's really going on there with the destruction of the Amazon, is the tribal cultures aren't able to obtain their medicines from the forest anymore, so they've got to go into town and buy pharmaceuticals. So you can see where that's going as well, you know.
Well, I feel like we've been trying to get that message out, but kind of on a micro level, is like a local level, is that, you know, all of these traditions that we've had for generations in each person's regional area or in their own communities, we're losing all this information, and we just have to hold on to it, and we have to train the children that are coming up after us these techniques. I mean, whether it be gardening or whatever it is, we can't let go of all of this knowledge and just rely on technology. There has to be a balance.
Well, there does, and there also does, in as much as even the knowledge of this situation goes, because when you say that, something else that we're doing that people aren't generally aware of is that even information about these things, we're storing it all on computers now. We're not buying books anymore. We're buying e-books and we're buying Kindle books. And really, all of our knowledge is being digitized. And so that means that all they have to do to lose that knowledge is turn off the power.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So it's important that people keep writing stuff down in books and keep maintaining a collection of knowledge that exists in the real world and not just the virtual world. I think that's something people are overlooking as well.
That's right, Max. And it's a hollow existence, really, when looking at it from a Western point of view. They might aspire to what they see in magazines and on billboards, maybe on the television. But we know, living it, it's a hollow premise. It's, even if you do get there, you never feel like you have. And what's the word I'm looking for? It's an empty feeling, like it never ends.
Well, it's because you're chasing a fiction. You're chasing a fiction. Yeah. You're chasing something which isn't obtainable. You know, the 2.4 kids and the white picket fence and the Brady Bunch lifestyle, it doesn't exist. It's a fiction. So, and not only that, but you're taught that if you don't obtain all of these things, which are completely unobtainable, then you're a lesser person. So you judge yourself poorly, and you judge the people around you by what they own, not by who they are. You judge them by what they own and what they do. Oh, this guy's a plumber. I don't want to talk to him. He's a plumber. He works with pipes under the ground, you know. It's not what he, you know, it's not who he is. It's what he does. He might be a wonderful person, might have great philosophies on life, but you don't look at that. You just see a plumber. You know, and you judge yourself poor. You don't have as big a front door as the guy next door or the latest model car, because you base your opinion of yourself by what you've managed to buy or what you managed to own, because you think what you own is who you are. But it's not. It's a fiction. So you look at our Western society, these are the parameters that we're given. So it's no wonder that people are in the state that they're in. And this is why people look at the fourth world or the third world and they go, oh, these people, they got no idea. Look at them. They're living in the mud. They got no idea what they're doing. Look at the technology I've got. Look at the house I've got. Look at all the stuff I've got. I'm better than they are. But it's not true. You know, in fact, the first world is what's created the third world. It's our exploitation of these countries and our stealing of their resources in order for us to have the big front door, which has created the situation of poverty that these people are in. You know, it's the economic model that they've been enslaved to. It's very interesting, the economic model and commerce, you know. You impose this system of commerce over someone's mind, they find it very, very difficult to think of life without commerce. It's a very interesting program that people run.
Yeah, I agree. I don't understand it myself, looking at it, the commerce process and, you know, the want to have all the stuff in your house. to me, it's a rather alien concept. I started moving away 20 years ago to try and reach what you might call a third world level of existence. And I absolutely love it. I wouldn't trade this for all the temples in paradise, all the big Rolls Royce or any of that kind of stuff. No way in the world. I can, yeah, I'm free. I'm a free man. I really am. I'm quite proud to admit that I don't pay tax. I might cop something for that one day, but until that day comes, I freely admit it, and I encourage others to do the same. Until they're doing something for you with that money and then genuinely helping our society, I've opted not to do it.
Well, yeah, I don't participate in government in any way, shape or form for the simple reason that I refuse to support organised crime. And that's the way it is. Exactly. And I'm quite happy to debate the issue with anyone who wishes to debate it with me.
Agreed, me as well. I really do. I love debating people over that. It's one of my favorite pastimes.
It seems like the hardest thing, the hardest lesson to teach someone is that you're not your things, and like the less you have, the more you can discover yourself.
Well, yeah, it's true. I mean, I've got a little bit of stuff around me, but not a lot. But I mean, I don't need a lot of stuff. It's just, I got little things around me that I enjoy looking at. I enjoy picking them up and holding them. And like I got a guitar, I enjoy picking it up and playing it now and then. But I mean, I don't really own any of it. It's just stuff that's here sharing the space with me. And I don't own anything. I've got this thing about ownership. I think ownership is one of the biggest frauds that's ever been perpetrated on human consciousness, because really this is a temporary existence. You're only here for a little while. The Earth's been here for, you know, billions of years, and you don't own it. It owns you. And even the stuff that you've got around me, I've got things around me. I've got a little obsidian ball here on the desk that I love to pick up and hold. This ball of mahogany obsidian. But this ball will be here after I die. So how could I possibly own the ball? And if the ball prevents me from doing anything, like if I didn't want to go out because I was scared someone would steal my obsidian ball, well, then the ball would own me, wouldn't it? It would control what I'm doing.
Point.
And that's what happens with people. You get all this stuff, and then you think, oh, I can't go overseas. I can't do all this anything because someone might come and take my stuff. So the stuff owns you. You don't own the stuff, you know? And I just think these are things that I share my space with. And frankly, I give a lot of stuff away. I found that if you really, really love something and you've had it for a while, if you really, really love it, perhaps you should give it to someone else who finds it attractive, because then they can share that thing the way you did. They can have that moment of really cherishing and really appreciating that object, you know. If you really, really love it, you should give it away to somebody else, because then they've got a piece of you. And it also helps train you to let go of stuff. Realize that you don't own anything, not even your body. Your body, you leave that, you go somewhere else. Your body decomposes, it goes back to the earth. It's just a vehicle that you're using to experience reality for a little while.
I kind of like the term caretaker. That's not me. That's how I usually refer to my animals, is I'm just their caretaker. I'm not their master or their owner. And I've kind of just incorporated that into everything now, you know, because like you said, I mean, when you're gone, it's probably still going to be here.
Yeah, that's the way it is. You don't own anything. Caretaker, custodians, that's what we are.
Well, even the rock, like you think that rock's going to be there for the rest of eternity, but it's slowly breaking down as well, turning into dust, putting more pressure on the continental plates, creating more magma to create more rocks. It just never stops. The world, the universe is in constant flux. And
yeah,
just moving from here to there.
This bit of dirt
shifting as we speak as the wind blows. So, yeah, I agree with Max. It is. It's the biggest joke ever played on man to say that they own the land. The Australian Aboriginal call themselves the caretakers of their ground that they walk around, and that's how they look at it. We're taking care of this.
Well, yeah,
I think we've
got
to get back to.
Of course, see, that's how you steal the earth as well. The only way you can steal the earth and claim ownership of the earth is by tricking other people into thinking that they can own part of it. See, if I want to own the land that you live on and help, like control that and trick you into thinking that I own it, first I have to convince you that you can own it. And then you'll go and work hard to fill out a little piece of paper that says that you own this particular piece of dirt. And then if I enslave you to an interest-based money system that's designed to implode, then that eventually, if I'm the one who issues the paper, the money, then eventually the land that you believe you own will transfer into my hands and you'll believe that I own it because you believe that ownership is real. And that's the way it works. That's how you steal the earth. You trick people into believing that they can actually own part of it. But you can't because you're only here for 50, 60, 80, 100, 120 maybe years. Maybe you have a really good run. But the earth's been here for 4.6 billion, so let's discuss that ownership 200 years from now and see how much you actually own.
Exactly.
You know?
I love it. Absolutely love it. Now, we're coming up to the first break of the broadcast. All right. We'll be back after this. Thank you very much for listening.
Exposing the hate and exploring the love. This is the Truth Radio Network.
Hey, welcome back with Tempest and Craig, and we're here talking tonight with our friend Max Egan, and we started out talking about his trip to Peru and just kind of went from there. So what do you think, Tempest? Should we continue on as we're going?
Well, I'd like to talk about something that's come up a lot lately over the last couple of weeks with people that I know, both non- and broadcasting-type people, okay. Listeners and broadcasters in general. They've found out about what's going on around them, and well, I don't know how long certain people have been doing it for, but it seems to been taking a toll of late. There's a lot of infighting going on. There's a lot of negative emotion going on within it. I just wonder if Max has got any way that people could help themselves with their own spirits and those of the spirits of the people around them.
Well, actually, I released a show last week on the People's Voice in England called The Energetic Universe. I released that show back in 2011, and I actually re-released it because I thought it was important for people to understand how reality works so they could understand how to deal with this sort of stuff. I think that over the last 12 months, we've seen a lot of infighting develop in the alternate research community. Because there's been a lot of, shall we say, disappointment over what was considered a non-event in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have been expecting some big change to happen, whether it's a global catastrophe, whether it's a comet hitting, whether it's Planet X, whether it's a global financial crash, World War III. Whatever, swine flu, whatever it is. People have been expecting a pivotal event which is going to wake the world up. And they've been getting energy from their expectation of that event. When that event failed to happen in the allotted time frame, a lot of infighting developed. A lot of people lost their connection to any type of energy and they started harvesting energy from each other. And this is what's happening. And there's a lot of people also in this movement who seem to want to be rock stars because it's kind of developed into that a little bit. It was a truth movement to begin with. There were people that were trying to get the truth out to people, and then certain people became elevated to positions of status and got given the title of modern-day gurus or modern-day prophets or whatever, and were kind of elevated to rock star status, and it seems to have gone to their heads a little bit. And a lot of other people want to jump on the bandwagon and be a rock star the way they perceive these other people to be. So I think a lot of the people have missed the point. And that's why we're seeing a lot of infighting. We're seeing a lot of bickering. Of course, we're seeing a lot of COINTEL stuff as well. I mean, divide and conquer. You've got certain people that are put in there simply to spread disinformation and to, make it as confusing as possible for people who are just coming on board to this information, and there's certainly a lot of that. And a lot of people are buying into it as well. I mean, a lot of people in the movement, a lot of people who are legitimate researchers are taking the bait and buying into some of the disinformation that's being spread about them. I mean, it happens. I mean, I've done it myself. It's easy to do. It's easy to fall into the trap. Especially when you're in a state where you're living around mobile phone towers, there's all sorts of electromagnetic stuff going on, lots of chemtrail spraying, lots of heart frequencies around. There's a lot of things going on to help disconnect you. it's very, very, very easy to take the bait sometimes and fall into these situations. But I think, you know, a lot of people are coming through it and they're getting stronger for it. They're realizing this is what it's all about, and they're realizing that it's happening because the alternate research community is actually making a difference. The alternate media is now the real media. You know, people are seeing through the propaganda that the television feeds them, and they're turning to the internet for real information. So it stands to reason that a lot of prominent people in the movement will be getting attacked by others.
Well, Max, do you think that there are just too many of these anticlimactic moments that everybody is being led up to on a general, I mean, it's like, okay, it's ISON. Okay, ISON didn't hit the world. Okay, in another week, it's another comet. Like, they're constantly keeping us waiting for that moment. And then it passes by, like you said, like December 21st, and everyone just kind of, what our expectations were, they just feel like, okay, I'm completely disappointed with this, and now I'm starting to think that none of this is reality, because it's just coming, there's just too much coming at me.
Well, oh, maybe absolutely. Ask this to Max. I'd like to pick the ball up for a second. I think that people get beaten down so far, or they end up at this really rock bottom place, and they look at something like that as just a way out. They don't care what it is.
Right.
Just as long as it stops.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, for sure. People want things. Well, people want a way out. They want the world to end. You know, as much as they're scared of it, they want it to happen. They want a comet to hit. They want something to happen that's going to change things. And of course, I mean, that's because they're so disempowered. They don't believe they can change anything themselves. They can. They can just change their perspective and change the way they interact with people. And I've had emails from people say, well, look, I've done that, and I'm still getting abused by my neighbors. Well, that's okay. Move to another neighbor. Move somewhere else. Now, don't expect anything. I don't expect anything from the people that I help. I just do it, and I do what I do because it needs to be done. And I lead by example in what I do. And, yeah, there are so many things that are put in place. They build you up and they let you down. They build you up and they let you down. And there's so many people that are so willing to jump on board any report they hear. Oh, it's Comet ISON. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. There's a financial crash. There's this. There's that. Swine flu. Whatever. They jump on board everything. Oh, here it is. The catastrophe's coming. And then it doesn't happen. And they're just crying wolf. They're just crying wolf. And eventually nobody believes anything they say because they're sick of them crying wolf. And, you know, there's not going to be any type of big global event. What we're seeing is a slow kill, a slow depopulation program, and a slow shift into transhumanism. This is what's happening. It's been happening right under people's noses. Agenda 21, it's been going on for a great many years now. They're doing it through GM food, they're doing it through fracking, they're doing it through the wars, depopulation, marginalization of countries, all sorts of stuff. I mean, it's going on right under our noses. And people are waiting for this big event, but they're not paying attention to what's happening all around them every day. And that's why it's done that way. You know, and again, it all comes down to the disempowerment of the community. I mean, we all complain about the government. We all think, oh, there's this, there's that, new laws, new taxes, you know, this and that. The new laws that are coming in Queensland. You understand the new bikie laws they've brought in where you can't refuse to answer a question that a police officer asks you, all this sort of stuff. What's everyone doing about this? And they see it on the news and they forget about it. They complain about bigger issues. They point the finger at politicians, point the finger at the mining companies, point the finger at this, point the finger at that. But they never think, why does this happen? It all happens because we can't stand up together and say enough is enough because we're all divided from each other. You know, so that's where I try to focus the shows. And I believe that's the only solution that we have. It's for us to rediscover ourselves, you know.
I can see a shift though in people and their attitude towards how this is all working out for them and are looking for alternatives and working towards it. I've noticed it in my area, especially over the last couple of years. I was approached about a month ago by three or four different people who didn't know each other, but they sort of all knew me, and they all come up with the same idea at the same time, and I'd had the same idea kicking around for a while. We actually have a co-op here with homegrown produce that we make, that we do grow ourselves, but there's nothing really organized. It's sort of a loose idea where you swap what you've got excess of with this guy over here when you get around to seeing him kind of thing. But these people that have approached me have said, well, why don't we get more organized and why don't we stick this stuff in one place at one time and people can just help themselves. And that was sort of kicked off about 3 weeks ago. And now there's about 20-odd people involved in it. And I'm sure by the time it actually gets running after Christmas because of the break and people have sort of scattered all around the place, I'm kind of interested to see what kind of numbers we get and how this actually turns out. So I'll keep everyone listening up to date with that.
That could be really
just
good.
Little things you can do.
Well, yeah, I mean, another thing you can do is something I want to do with the Full Circle Project next year is I want to help people start something like that and start a local cooperative, like a little market garden, where you grow three garden beds, you keep one for yourself and you sell the other two, and then get all the money. You get a whole bunch of people in the community. You get like 10 or 20 people, families who want to do this. You've got the land to do it. And then get the money from the gardens that you sell. And start your own bank. Open your own bank where you're still using their paper. That's okay. We'll use your paper if you're going to make us do it. We'll use it. But we'll open our own bank so we can give all the members of the cooperative interest-free loans. You know, so you get yourself out of that central banking system. You could do the loans to people for like 1% interest. So that would cover the paperwork and the you know, whatever it takes to run the bank. That's all you need is 1%. You know, and that needs to never change. And that way you free yourself from their banking system. Even if we're using their paper, we're not using their banking system, because ultimately it's the banking system that's the problem. Paper's just paper. Money's just stuff that we, you know, pass around to each other and give it value. It's the interest-based central banking system that's the problem. So we can circumvent that ourselves by these gardening cooperatives. So that's something else that I want to try to put together next year.
That's a really interesting, Max. I'm very interested to hear more about that.
That's something,
get it together.
Well, you start your own bank in each community, you know what I mean? All you need to do is get all the people in the community who own land, get them to start, you know, start a market garden. All the rest of the people in the community could buy from the market gardens, and they could use that money to start a bank which served that community. All the people that grow the gardens and all the people that buy from the gardens, these people can all now get interest-free loans. So it frees them from that banking system. I mean, the government's not going to like it, but hey, good.
I like that attitude. I love that. Another good thing about doing stuff like that too is that you develop your little network locally, just outside the food thing and the banking thing, is that you can share time, labor. You also there to back each other up constantly with things you've done around the house.
Yeah, you break down the barriers in your community and you show the people in your community that you care. You know, all you need is a postcode in this area to join this bank. You know what I mean? Just participate in the co-op. We'll give you a little card so you can come and shop on your card so we know who you are. So, you know, you're part of the card, you're part of the database. Hey, you can use this bank. You know, we could do this in every community and this would free us from the central banking system and we're still using their paper. Hey, checkmate, you know? So, you know, there's ways around that we can just start off in a direction like that. That's just one thing, you know, but there's so many things we can do. Well, there's so many things we can do to empower our community. I mean, you start addressing people's hip pocket. That's where they're going to feel it. Everyone is feeling the pinch. So let's create a bank that everybody can use in the local community. And we can do that by growing organic produce and getting the local community healthy at the same time. So it's a win-win situation whereby even if you don't have land, you can't grow the market garden, well, all you got to do is shop there and you're part of it, you know. And so we can do this. We can create a system that works for us and circumvent their system using their own rules. And, you know, gradually we'll get to a stage where things work out even better than that. But, you know, I'm just trying to think of little stepping stones to get there that's going to empower a local community that may still be locked into the matrix. You know, you've got people that are locked into their left brain. They're locked into this reality. Okay, well, what can we do to empower them a little bit and get them united with the people around them? Well, this urban agricultural cooperative could work really well to do that. You know?
Well, that's something I always thought about is if you're in a small neighborhood or a little community, or if you started growing tomatoes and all of a sudden your whole yard was full of tomatoes and you grow these really great tomatoes and then your neighbor decides they want to put in blueberry bushes, you know, and that's how these things start. And the next thing you know, the entire neighborhood is self-sustaining because you got one who's getting eggs and one who's doing milk and, you know, and it becomes a small community, and then it begins to expand out into these cooperative. But there's just these innovative thoughts of just small steps that can change society on the whole. But it all starts like in little small pockets. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think that's the problem with a lot of this is people want to get it all changed tomorrow, and they just think about how they can bring down the government or change it globally. But really it is. It's if you can provide everything that you need locally, that just drops the power base from them instantly.
It's got to be. It's got to be grassroots. And expanding on even what you said, I was in Peru recently and I was talking to someone there and they were saying to me, look, I live in an apartment building. How can I apply something to my apartment building? And I said to them, well, do you have a balcony? And they said, yeah. I said, well, put a garden box on your balcony and grow tomatoes on your balcony. And then have a talk to the person upstairs and ask them if they'd like to grow zucchinis. And then the guy downstairs and ask them if they'd like to grow carrots. And, you know, eventually you've got the whole apartment block, each one of whom has a balcony, who has a garden box that's growing a different vegetable. And you're all swapping with each other.
And
this breaks down the barriers in your building straight away. I mean, we all know people across the other side of town, but we don't know the people in the house next door or the apartment next door. You know, it's an interesting thing about society. The closer you pack people in, the more divided they become from each other. So that's a way to do it. Even if you're in an apartment building and you don't have any land, you can still create a little garden cooperative within your building. And you can break down the barriers with your neighbors. And that's the most important thing that we can do, is to get united with our community around us, because that unity is what gives us power. And it's the disunited state of our communities which has allowed the world to become what it is today. And it's what allows the problems to be perpetuated. So we've got to focus the energy there. Because the disunited state of the community, that's the reason for government corruption and the remainder of government corruption, the continuation of government corruption. It's the reason for corrupt legislation. It's the reason for the corporate rape of the planet. It's the reason for the wars, for the starvation, for the homelessness, for the pollution. All of it is because of divided communities, because we don't know how to address the problem. And the problem is the corruption of government that exists because we are divided as communities. And that's because we're divided in ourselves. We don't really know who we are. We're taught to believe that we are what we do or what we own, but we never really address who we are, and we're led away from the art of our own lives. So that's really where the focus has to be. I truly believe this, that once people rediscover themselves, we'll change the world in one day.
That's for sure, just to know who you are and where you're going and why you're doing it, I think. That's what I tell a lot of people, like, why are you doing this? Why are you spending 60 years of your life paying off a house that you, so you can retire into and die peacefully in your sleep? To me, the whole idea of that kind of a slave system is something that I've never been able to get in my head, even from a young age. I couldn't see the point in that.
Well, yeah, again, it's the misconception of ownership, you know, the lie of ownership. It's a fraud.
Well, and the garden is, and food is absolutely a priority, that we need to get these better vegetables and foods into our bodies. But it doesn't just have to be, it doesn't just have to stop there. If you're in one of these large urban dwellings, like a large apartment complex or whatever, I mean, you can learn some in your limited space. You can learn so many other things that people need that you could use as a method of trade. Like I have a friend who was interested in becoming more self-reliant, and Tempest has been trying to push me into making soaps because he's made it and found really a lot of pleasure in that. And so I'm going to take her on that journey as well, because I'm hoping that'll open her mind up to her possibilities and just how limitless they are. You know, if she's thinking outside of that box of how she's told to think. So, food is definitely important, but that's not the only thing. I mean, there are so many things that we need to learn to make. And like I said, to just use as trade.
It's everything,
well, yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can do it at home, do it at home.
Right.
Well, you know, we're just discussing options here, and what people like to come up with and say all the time is, okay, so what's the alternative? And I think it all comes down to your own imagination. Can you think of a way where you don't have to rely on that system too much? Any way you can. I mean, some people live in a very cold climate where they can't grow their own food at this time of year. It gets hard, but you got to start looking into how you can store it in the spring and the summer when you can grow it. Then you get together in these co-ops. The best thing about it, I've found, is that you share a lot of information. When's the best time to plant? When do I sow? And, you know, how do I preserve it? And just the sharing of the information, that's the number one benefit, I think, even besides the eating of the food itself. which is really good. But I think the sharing of information is the best thing that I've come across doing this.
Well, yeah, it's really important that you do that. It's really important that you share what you know with people. And it's very important that you apply yourself to the world that you live in. And I think we've all got to really push the limit with our local councils and our governments. Now, create an initiative that is empowering your community and doing good things. And people are benefiting from this initiative, like, for example, you know, an agricultural cooperative. And then push it as far as you can. Just start opening stalls and selling food and giving cheap food to people, and open your own local bank and see what sort of a flack you get from government. And the more flack you get, the more you should push it with them and do it as publicly as possible, because it demonstrates to the people that their council and the government does not have their best interests at heart. Because if you're doing something that empowers your community and the council is there to serve the community, why would they want to come along and regulate what you're doing? Because that's what they do. I mean, if you get an idea, they come to regulate the idea. They hate new ideas. They just hate people to think independently and to have new ideas, because new ideas mean change, and change may threaten what they control. So they're not really interested in people having new ideas for no reason, not unless they can regulate that idea and turn it into something that council or government can profit from. That's the only type of ideas.
You've got to overcome that.
Yeah, that's the only type of ideas they're interested in. So you just got to have these ideas and implement them. And do it because you understand that you don't have to seek permission from council. Council has to seek permission from you. Council in Australia isn't even government. I mean, they pass themselves off as local government, but they're not. I mean, we were going to have a referendum this year to give councils constitutional recognition. They didn't have the referendum, but they wouldn't even be suggesting that they have one if councils had constitutional recognition. You know, and if they did, they would be local government, but they don't, and they're not. They're not even legally allowed to make any laws or bylaws or do any of the things that they're doing. They just get away with it because we don't understand. We don't understand who and what they are, because we don't understand who and what we are. And even if we do try to stand up against the illegal actions of council, we very rarely win, because we live in divided communities. Again, it always comes back to the same thing. So you've got to create initiatives, and you've got to really, really push the limit with these people and push the envelope with these people as much as you can, in order to demonstrate to those people who are still asleep around you that these people do not have your best interests at heart, and that we need to take the matter in hand.
Yeah. I think I personally find very, very entertaining to do as well, if that's the right word, entertaining. But I do love it. I love pushing my boundaries, if you want to say that's what they are, like the ones that they impose on me anyway. I love pushing them. No, I love pushing, stirring up these people. What are you going to do about it, mate? You know, you arm yourself with the facts, like Max just said. Like, you don't have the authority to say this. I'd like to show you, I'd like you to show me how you prove that. Just keep pushing them and overcome this fear. I mean, they can do a lot to you. I understand that, but it depends on what you regard as being very important to your life. If you're not willing to stand up and take the fall, if it does come down on you, are you quite happy to walk around on your knees for the rest of your life begging for it, you know, whatever they're going to throw you? I'd personally rather take the fight to them, and if they deal with me, they deal with me. But I'm quite prepared to have for the consequences.
Well, I think we've had some good examples of these sort of initiatives with the foreclosures here, like. There's been some Occupy foreclosure groups that have taken on their city councils, and they've been able to fight off a lot of foreclosures. And then there was Food Not Bombs, which took on, I believe, the Orlando, Florida city council, who passed ordinance saying that you couldn't feed the homeless, and they took on them. So there's been these tiny victories all around. They just don't get the exposure because, of course, they don't want that news to get out there. But the more we learn from these trials like that, where they just really take on their city councils, the more we can do it on a broader spectrum.
Absolutely. Look, what sort of a government or council is going to pass legislation that says you can't feed the homeless?
Mm-hmm,
exactly. That's absolutely absurd. You'd say, well, look, I'm sorry, but you're a public trustee, and if you're attempting to enact legislation which obviously does such harm to people, then I'm requiring you to show cause why you shouldn't be held in breach of trust and taken to the Hague and tried for human rights violations.
Right.
I mean, it's as simple as that. We're not going to do this because I will not comply with any legislation which interferes with my moral compass. It's as simple as that. And if you're saying that I have to, then you're in breach of trust, and let's boogie.
Good point.
Well, yeah, that's the attitude we have to take. That's the thing. You can't back down to these people. If they're going to be so absurd and so psychopathic and sociopathic that they dare to pass legislation like that and call it law, then these people are in clear breach of trust, and they need to be held accountable for their actions. It's as simple as that. And if the modern police aren't willing to do it, then fine, we'll take it to an international court, because you can't do this. It's as simple as that. We're not here to debate the issue. We're here to point out that you're a criminal, and we're going to deal with it. That's the attitude we have to have. You really have to take on that attitude. Don't have fear of these people. They're just sociopaths that have tricked you into thinking that they've got power, but they don't.
You just got to remember the dot. They're a little tiny dot, and we're a lot of dots, which makes up a huge mass of people.
I know where that comes from.
Thanks very much for that link, Craig. That's a good one. Maybe you should chuck it in the chat room to people right
I'll
now.
I'll get that. I'll get right on it.
We're coming up to the top of the hour break in the next 30 seconds. But that's just to go to what Max just said. He's absolutely right. Do not be afraid of these people. They should be afraid of us. Welcome back to Craig and Tempest here on Truth Frequency Radio Network, News Without the Hate, Hype and Fear. And I noticed there's a few Australians in the chat room. One in particular, Mario, brought something to my attention a couple of weeks ago from a government website here in Australia, registered trademark, about a cholera outbreak, or an alleged cholera outbreak. So I had a bit of a look into it, and apparently it's on one small island in the Torres Strait. It's about 50 kilometres off the top of Australia, halfway to New Guinea, and it affects about 200-odd people, but there's a risk of it spreading. What I understand about cholera is that you can throw it out of stagnant water using 3 or 4 sheets of fine muslin. And most people in Australia do drink some kind of filtration on their water, whether they're tank water or bore or on their dreaded town supply. That's running through a few different filters as far as I know. And I really had to question this. There's a lot to this that just doesn't make any sense. They propose to give a company called PaxVax, they have given them $22 million to come up with some kind of cholera vaccine that they're going to disperse through the air. And they don't really say on the website how they're going to do that, but apparently it's starting in January. And also quite illustrated, quite predominantly on the website, is that they are not, in bold capital letters, receiving comments from the public yet over it. Which I thought was a bit rude. Like, it's a very big website, web page. It hasn't got that much information on it, but they took the time to put that line in there, which just goes to show us they respect what you think or care. So they're going to start doing this in Western Australia, Victoria and Queensland and South Australia. I don't see the reason for South Australia and Victoria copping it if it's up here in the Torres Strait, which is up in New Guinea. And for everyone listening elsewhere, Victoria is right down the bottom of Australia in the cold weather. There's a lot to it that just doesn't make any sense. And it's good to see that the Australian tax is chipping in $22 million to a pharmaceutical company to help them get off the ground. I mean, we never know how much of a struggle it is for the pharmaceutical companies right now and the hard times they've fallen on. But it's good to see that the Australian taxpayer is investing to prop these guys up and probably make a couple of billion out of it that probably never would come out of the fund again. Does anyone have any thoughts on that? Like a cholera outbreak, then chemtrailing us to kill it. To me, it just makes no sense.
Well, I think the important thing to remember here is to not believe a word that your government tells you. I think that should be the number one rule in most people's lives. And God knows what they're actually spraying and what they're actually doing it for. But I mean, we know they've been doing all sorts of stuff anyway through the chemtrailing they've been doing. We know they've been spraying all sorts of things into the environment. So it doesn't surprise me that they would attempt to find some way to legitimize this spraying. It probably means that they're going to ramp up the spraying, and they're scared people are going to notice it, and so they've created an excuse to do so.
Yeah, that's what I Little Tempest earlier, I think it sounds like a cover story to me, because the whole thought process, when you think about it, it doesn't make any sense, because how could you spray a vaccine for something like cholera? It just doesn't make any sense at all. So it had to be some basic cover story for ramping up or whatever.
Yeah, there's something very, very fishy about this. Like I said, the number one guideline in people's lives should be that they do not believe one single word their government tells them.
Well, that's why people send me this stuff, because I've actually given up listening to what they say. Pay attention to what they do, but anything that's coming out of their mouth found over the last 20 years has just been a waste of time paying any attention to it.
Well, I mean, they tell you what they're going to do, really. They say, look, we're never going to introduce carbon tax. And so you know that because they mentioned carbon tax, they're going to bring it in. You know, whatever they tell you they're not going to do, they just say, oh, by the way, we're never going to do this. That means that they just planted that little seed in your mind that there may be someone who wants to do it, which means that that's what they're going to do. That's the way they work.
I like to say, if they tell you not to worry about it, it's time to worry. If they say worry about it, there's nothing the matter. Up is down, black is white. I understand the lingo. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but the concept of spraying a vaccine, it's ludicrous. Why would they even consider this to be, you know, real? I mean, you couldn't possibly spray for a vaccine, you know, spray a vaccine for people. It doesn't make sense at all.
Gullibility test, maybe. I'm not sure.
You see how
a thousand people that...
Yeah.
Exactly.
Check the fluoride levels.
Yeah, maybe that's what it's all about. Let's see how effective this fluoride actually is. Let's see how many people are into this rubbish.
Makes a lot of sense to me.
I know Craig also wanted to bring up with you, Max, the whole issue about transhumanism.
Well, transhumanism is absolutely where we're going. So, yeah, it's an interesting topic. You can see the subliminal programming for it everywhere, and if you look at what they're doing and the way science is going, yeah, that's the way we're heading.
I kind of wanted to start off maybe with a quote that you had from Transcendent Man from Ray Kurzweil that was in the transformation video, where he says the universe will wake up, it will become intelligent, and then God will exist after we nanotech the world and move out into the universe. And I mean, the only thing I could think when I heard that was, well, isn't the universe already awake and intelligent? I mean, man didn't create dolphins or ecosystems. I mean, they may be trying to create them now, but that sounds like intelligence to me on some level.
Well, yeah.
This whole notion of hubris, you know, that we are going to be the gods that create everything, but I look around me and there's a whole universe around me already, and it has to be, I mean, not to be religious or anything, but I mean, the pure hubris of stating that we are going to create God is just, to me, it's beyond any, it's just way out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, Ray Kurzweil is completely insane, of course. I mean, you'd have to be to think that way. He may be highly intelligent, but it doesn't alter the fact that he's completely insane. And he has an incredible fear of death. He believes that the man's destiny is basically to create the Borg and go and assimilate the universe, which is what he's talking about. He's talking about sending nanotechnology infused with artificial intelligence out into space to basically infect and assimilate everything it comes into contact with. And this is the Borg. This is what he sees us as becoming. So eventually we will harness all the energy and all the intelligence of the entire universe, and it will be there to serve man, because man is the top of the universal food chain. And he says also in his film Transcendental Man that soon, nanotechnology will infect everything. All the rocks, the trees, everything will be infused with nanotechnology. Well, okay, how would they carry out something like that? What would be the delivery system? Chemtrails, of course. They'd spray it from the sky. And if you really look at what's going on around you, look at Morgellon syndrome, and you see that this is already in everything. There's nanotechnology appearing everywhere. And this is where transhumanism is going. This is the way they're doing it. a lot of people are expecting them to start developing microchips and putting microchips into your body and little plantons, you know, little eye patches, bringing in Google Glass, the new glasses that Google are bringing in to basically give you the internet in your glasses that you're wearing on your head. So this all this sort of stuff, it's all leading towards transhumanism, but people are expecting it to be add-ons like that, you know, like eye patches and computer chips and all this sort of stuff. But what if they're doing it from the inside out? What if they're infusing nanotechnology with your DNA and they are altering your DNA and altering you on a genetic level from the inside out? What if they're doing it that way? And that would make far more sense, really, to do it that way. And we have the technology to do it that way. And you could create nanotechnology which would be affected by electromagnetic frequencies. For example, they've created nanotechnology which you can infuse, inject into rats, and it will switch the genes on and off in the rats depending on the electromagnetic signal that you feed the nanotechnology that you expose the rat to. This is in mainstream science. They've done tests to show that this is what they're doing. They're injecting nanotechnology into rats. They're bombarding them or hitting them with an electromagnetic frequency, and the nanotech is attaching itself to the DNA of the rats and it's switching the genes on and off. So this is the experiment that they're running. So if they're infusing the environment in general with nanotechnology and we're all breathing this and it's infusing itself and combining itself with our DNA through these little arrays, these little nano arrays that the nanotech creates. I talk about this in transhumanism, in transformation. I've got a part of a presentation that was given by Sophia Smallstall where she talks about this and how these nano arrays are created, and these are for hybridizing DNA. So if we're breathing this stuff in, then okay, how are they going to affect it? Well, they'll do it electromagnetically. So then we see this smart meter grid being put in place all around the planet. What are these things really for? What, just to give us more effective refrigerators? Really? Is that what they're doing it for? I mean, come
That's
on.
That's like fluoride for, you know, for better teeth.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we believe that the government is going to go to spend all these millions and millions of dollars putting fluoride in the water because they care so much about our teeth. Of course they do. I mean, look at what else they're doing to the world. But no, it doesn't matter about all the oil spills and Fukushima and all this stuff. We really care that when you die, you have perfect teeth. So, yeah, of course, we're supposed to believe that. And we're supposed to believe that these smart meters are there to actually read what's going on in our house. The smart meters are there to create an electromagnetic environment. They can send and receive signals. And if your body is full of nanotechnology, they're putting all these microwave towers in place everywhere, putting all these smart meters on everyone's homes. Come on, folks, wake up and smell the coffee. An electromagnetic control grid is being put in place that is going to affect the nanotech in everybody's bodies. And now, I know that sounds really outrageous and really out there to a lot of people, but I've done a lot of research, and when I released that film, Transformation, and I put that information in the film, a lot of people said, look, you're really going out on a limb with this. But since I put it out, which was around about a year ago or a year and a half ago, I've seen a massive amount of stuff to confirm everything that I put in that film. This transhumanist control grid is being put in place. It's being done on a genetic level from the inside out. And this is what's happening. This is the direction that we're going. And this is another thing that's going on while everybody is distracted, looking around them and waiting for a big catastrophe. They're not paying attention to what's going on right under their noses right now. And it's a big issue. And I think it also has a lot to do with why Fukushima was staged. I think Fukushima was done for a reason. I think it was purposely done. You don't get something as dramatic as Fukushima and as potentially hazardous as Fukushima without it being planned. I mean, you don't put 52 nuclear reactors in Japan for a start. I mean, this is a nuclear accident waiting to happen. So well, I think there's a lot more to this than meets the eye, and I think it's all pointing towards a transhumanist agenda.
Well, you know, Naomi Klein referred to it as disaster capitalism, and I feel that, like, there's always – none of these things happen by accident, like the Hurricane Katrina down here close to me on the coast. I mean, there was a huge, burst of – corporate structures that just flooded in there after that catastrophe. And it, that just seems to be the case that all these things, I mean, conspiracy theory or not, I mean, they always have these outcomes and you look back and you're like, okay, now I can see where this might have not been natural.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, a lot of these things are contrived, but Fukushima is, I mean, it's the elephant in the living room. It's a potentially extinction-level event whereby one will need to be transhuman in order to survive in
wow.
such an environment. Because it's a very difficult problem to overcome. I spent a lot of time thinking about Fukushima, and the only real option I can think of to overcome the radiation would be something like mycelium. Mycelium is known to neutralize radiation, the fungus, you know, it's a very, very wonderful stuff. But then how do you put mycelium on a core that's melting down? Even mycelium can't handle temperatures like that you experience in a nuclear meltdown. And it's right there on the edge of the water table. It's polluting the Pacific Ocean at a phenomenal rate. How do we deal with this? You can't dump concrete on it and encase it in a sarcophagus the way they did with Chernobyl. What do you do? I can't see a way out of Fukushima. I think it's almost like the perfect disaster. It's a disaster that I can't conceive any way of being able to be undone. I can't see any way of remedying this disaster. It seems to be the perfect extinction event. So I'm keeping a close eye on that. You know, I think really, I mean, what's it going to take to change it? Perhaps a shift in consciousness. Perhaps it's the ultimate test for humanity. I can't see what else will work, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was just about to say, actually, Max, is you didn't see the alleged world government, the one that cares about us so much, all run to the problem and say, well, let's start working this out from the day dot. How long has it been now? 2.5 years? And there's still no closer, really, to a solution to this.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous.
Especially guys with the billions of bucks.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's the most important issue that we're facing, and no one's paying attention to it.
Well, you know, Max, I wanted to get back on the transhumanist bit for just a second, and you asked the question in transformation. Well, what about the skeptics? You know, they say, well, this couldn't be happening or whatever because these people would be affected, meaning the, you know, the rulers, the leaders, the legislators, whoever. And I thought it was very important that you said, but yeah, they buy into the system. So they are in it, just full forced into this sort of religious, view of transhumanism. So I thought that was a really interesting point that I don't think very many people would have thought about. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Well, yeah, you know, like if we immerse ourselves in this robotic future, this transhumanist future whereby we've got robotic implants and digital implants in our body, and that's all very well, but those people who are in control of those implants, what do they get? They've got a different, you know, view of reality. And what we perceive to be upgrades may well be downgrades, may well be putting us in a situation where we can be controlled by an outside source. And these people want that. These people are psychopaths. They want a situation whereby they can control everybody. They want to know what everybody's thinking. You think about it. If you've got Google being, you know, projected into the frontal lobe of your brain and you guys can ring each other by thinking about each other and then speak to each other telepathically. This is over a digital network. That means all your thoughts can be monitored. So who is monitoring them? You know, these psychopaths, they want to know what everybody is doing because there may be someone somewhere born at some day who may think independently and they may pose a threat to me at some stage. And so I need to know who they are so I can take them out. That's the way they think. And they want to be able to know what everybody is thinking at every minute of every day. And no thoughts that you have, your innermost desires will be exposed to the world. Every single person, everything you think about will be exposed.
And data catalog it all.
Absolutely. And they will be able to get you for thought crime. They'll be able to get you for even thinking of rebellion. And if you think outside of the box at all, you'll be viewed as a terrorist. I mean, this is where they're heading. They want to be able to control everybody. And all a terrorist is in the parameters of this modern society is someone who questions the actions of government. Ultimately, that's who they're categorizing as terrorists. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've openly admitted that they viewed Nelson Mandela as a terrorist up until 2009. They still had him on the terrorist watch list. You know, so it's anybody who thinks outside the parameters dictated by government and maybe a threat to government, anybody who may think independently or have a new idea that we have not yet learned how to regulate may be a potential terrorist because they may interfere with our hegemony. That is the role of government these days. That's the way it's going. And the people who join government and are raised to positions of power in government, they're all psychopaths. I mean, it's a psychopathic system. And if you're not a psychopath or a sociopath, you never even get to a position of power within it anyway. So these people are paranoid psychopaths. That's why they even become the rulers of other people. I mean, a normal guy wouldn't want the gig. And people say, Max, you'd be a great politician. You should be prime minister. Like, I don't want the gig. There's no way I want to be prime minister because I don't want to control anybody else because I'm not a sociopath. Only sociopaths want the gig. Nobody who wants the job as a leader deserves to have the job because they're not suitable for the position simply because they want the position. You know, that should be the parameters that we measure our politicians by.
Well, Max, Singing Monarch in our chat room put up a statement that I wanted to read to you because I think it's really what you're saying. And she said that humans she thinks that humans can communicate in that way naturally without a chip. They're just those that are in power are just jealous because they can never reach that state of consciousness, and so they have to cheat and try to control it.
Look, I think they can reach that state of consciousness. They've just prevented most people from being able to through fluoride and toxins and the environmental state that we're in. Most of human society is not able to use all of their higher senses. A lot of these people that are in charge and have all of this ancient knowledge, they probably still can. They're aware that this reality exists. And this is why they presented to us this digital clunky version of it, like the internet. And we take to the internet like a fish to water because it seems so natural to us to have this communication, this instant communication with each other because it's in our natural state. We've just forgotten that. So now they're presenting us with this cheap digital clunky version that they can control. And they know that humanity as you know, generally will fully embrace this transhumanist move because it's inherent to them. It's natural for them to have this connection. But it's a checkmate for them because it's a digital mechanical version that can be controlled by an outside source. Whereas if we were simply left to have a toxin-free environment without fluoride in the water and all the toxins and neurotoxins in the food and the electromagnetic soup we're swimming in, all of our higher senses would come online and we would experience far more than any digital communication could ever grant us, you know? So, yeah, she's right.
That's an interesting point about the mind control and looking after their best interests. You've noticed the United Nations protection of the child's rights from, when was that, 3 years ago, I think that was published. They begin profiling children at 6 months in daycare centres, and it never stops, basically. From the time that, you know, you're born, they're making sure that they're getting a psych evaluation on a child at 6 months old. Now, why do they need that? And what's the point of that?
Oh, just to keep you safe, of course, you know, to keep you safe in case a child's a terrorist. It isn't to pick out anybody who may be thinking independently and keep an eye on them because they may be a threat to government. It's to keep you safe. Believe me. Trust me on this one.
It's just the questions I like to ask people that are involved in the program at a ground level.
Yeah, I mean, it's so transparent, isn't it? Really, it's so transparent. I mean, you know, they are so paranoid. They have to do this. This child may be a threat to the government. This child may think independently. We can't have that. We need to see which ones are thinking smart so we can keep an eye on them. Hopefully we'll lead them down a path where they're kept in scarcity and they become a drug addict or a stripper or something, you know. That's what happens, you know, because people can't fit into society so they become outcasts. We'll lead them down that path. Either that or keep a watch on them and get them in prison some other way, you know.
It kind of reminds me of like when I was growing up and how we would hear about Soviet Russia and how you were picked as a child for what you were going to do for your life, you know, and you were kind of honed out at that young age. And, I guess if you showed any signs of subversion as a child, then you might have been put in a little mental institution or whatever. I mean, this is how we were raised, believe that Soviet Russia was. And it sounds like we're coming right back to that now.
Oh, absolutely.
That sort of mindset has been
for a very long time. And people just haven't noticed it. It's just becoming more apparent now because we have the internet.
Mm-hmm. Freedom of information. They never realized that this would happen once they got their monitor system in place on how to keep track of everything everyone was saying. They didn't realize that one day that we might use it to actually communicate what they are doing on a mass scale. I don't think they expected that. Well, maybe they did. But I don't think they expected to get the result they're getting right now.
No, I don't think they expected it to go the way it is. I think they're scared to death of what's going on. I really do. I think there's so many people that are empowered now, and this is most of what the internet is about these days. I mean, there's truth on so many sites now. I can Google one of my radio shows, you know, just Google. I used to try this. I mean, after I'd uploaded a radio show to YouTube, I'd Google it. I'd just Google the title of the show to see where it was posted, and I'd find that it was posted in the most, like, real estate agents' websites and a wrestling forum and all sorts of weird places. And I'm thinking, this is interesting. So the message is getting out to all sorts of places, and they really can't control the rising consciousness that's happening because not enough people are moving into fear. There's too many shows that are empowering people, and people are moving into self-empowerment rather than fear. And I think that's the last thing they expected.
We've got to keep at it and never surrender. You should think about unscrewing yourself.
And we're back. This is Craig and Tempest on the Truth Frequency Network, and we've been sitting around talking with Max Egan this evening, and I think we've covered a lot of topics. But we always want to leave on a really positive note. So if we're in the last segment talking about where do we go from here, it seems like a big task we have at hand. What are your thoughts on that, Max?
Well, as far as the movement is, don't you mean, Craig, what the truth movement should be working towards doing now as far as educating people and keeping their own mind together? There's a lot of people out there at the moment absolutely losing it, in my opinion.
Exactly.
Well, look, they have been for a while. A lot of people have been for a while. Like I said, there's a lot of competition in the movement. A lot of people got this sort of rock star thing going on. There's also a lot of people who have a vested interest in maintaining the fight. They're not really interested in solutions. There's a lot of people selling fear, and they're making, you know, quite a good income out of selling fear. And so they're not really focused on solutions. I think it's all got to come down to the individual. As I said, it's now, people are looking for the silver bullet. They're looking for someone to come along who's going to create a movement or a new political party or, you know, the latest movie, you know, who's going to save the world. You know, like Zeitgeist came out. Everyone thought Zeitgeist was going to change the world, but Zeitgeist was a movie. It doesn't change the world. You do by changing your perspective of what the world is and how you apply yourself to the world. And that's what it's all got to come down to. That's what grassroots is all about. It's not even a grassroots movement in the community. It's up to each individual to change the way they interact with the world around them. And that sounds very esoteric to a lot of people, but ultimately that is the solution. That's how we change the world. Because once you understand what you are and you understand how reality works and you begin to respect yourself as the perfect expression of creation that you are, because we're all perfect. Each one of us is perfect. We may be imperfect in the way we view ourselves according to the parameters that we're given to judge ourselves by. But ultimately, what we're here to be in this reality is ourselves. What we're here to experience is ourselves, of course, because that's what we are. So that's what we're here to experience. And we are perfect at being ourselves. In fact, no one can be you better than you can. So why would you judge yourself as being anything but perfect? And once we can see ourselves from that perspective and see the validity in ourselves, then we can begin to respect ourselves and we can really begin to see what we are. And just that understanding of what we are helps us see other people for what they are, which is exactly the same as what we are, except from a different perspective. It is completely unique to them. And that's what makes them them. That's what makes me me, is my unique perspective of reality that I'm perfect at having and no one can have better than me. And that's what we all are, each of us are. Once we can view ourselves that way and view others that way, I believe we can change things. Because from that perspective comes respect. And that's what we've lost. We judge ourselves by artificial parameters, and we've got to really, really look at what we are. Look at the art of our lives. Look at the expression of creation that you are. Not what you do or what you own or where you live or what you look like. It's who and what you are that's important. And that's the way I believe we have to look at things. And when we can do that, the world will change. It's really quite simple. It sounds complicated and it sounds hard and it sounds esoteric and sounds like some hippie talking, but when it really sinks into you what's going on here, you see that it works. It's absolutely how it works. And really there's no other solution. You know, there's nothing we can vote in. There's no movement we can join. We have to change our perspective of reality and change our perspective of who and what we are. That's when reality will change.
Well, you know, Max, I'm glad you brought up Zeitgeist because I looked into all these other movements and stuff before I ever saw transformation. And ultimately what I found was it was another kind of top-down approach where there's these leaders telling you how it's supposed to be or, you know, a resource-based economy or whatever the issue is. But when I found transformation, the thing that sparked me was the fact that it told me to look inward and to look at myself, and that was the starting point. And I think that was a really important message that was broadcast through that film that I can't seem to find anywhere else. Every other sort of movement tends to have a leader, and whereas you tend to say you are a leader, you know.
Well, you are. There can be no leaders in this movement. No one can lead you to yourself but yourself. And when you truly discover yourself and what you are, reality changes. It just does by default. Now, if you can look at the film that I made, The Awakening, which I attempted to help understand, help people understand the electromagnetic nature of reality. The show that I did on the People's Voice last week called The Energetic Universe. This is to help people understand how reality works and what you are. And when you understand that, you realize that there are no leaders. No one can lead you to yourself but yourself. And the reason you don't respect the people around you or even respect yourself is because you judge yourself by parameters which are completely artificial, which are given to you by this society in order to prevent you from ever discovering yourself and prevent you from ever being all that you could be. Because you're taught to think within a little boxed view of reality. You're taught to measure yourself up to artificial parameters that you can never achieve. No matter how achievable they're presented to you as being, they're not achievable because they're not you. They're not who you are. You know, you're an artistic expression of creation. Your life itself is an artistic statement. You know, the art of you, the art of how you stand, how you dress, how you speak, how you move, how you conduct yourself. This is art. It's all art. Life is art, you know. The art of you, it's not the skills that you've gained and the job that you've got. It's the art of being you that you've lost. And once we reconnect with that and reconnect with the earth, I think reality will just change. And that's where it has to come from, because once you discover that about yourself, you can see the fiction of government. Government isn't real. It just exists in a book. It's just an idea. They wrote all these rules down on pieces of paper. And men with expensive suits that we elect to be trustees of our infrastructure go to these big buildings and they do what it says in the book. And all they're really doing in these books these days is writing rules down which they use to steal everything that you own from you. And they call it law because we believe they have power over us. And that's all government does. It just steals the wealth of the people. That seems to be its only purpose these days. But hang on a minute. We created this society in order to have some sort of viable infrastructure so we could be all that we could be. So how come everything that prevents us from being all that we could be comes from parameters given to us by this society? How did it get to this state? It's because we forgot who and what we are. We forgot the art of ourselves. We forgot what life actually is. It isn't about adhering to all of these fictional parameters and measuring ourselves up to be this, you know, synthetic version of reality that we're supposed to be. It isn't about what we do. It's about who we are. It's about how free we are to express ourselves and how free we are to create and how free we are to expand human consciousness to become all that it could be. and to rediscover ourselves. That's what we're here to do. We're not here to do any of the stuff that they're making us do. And we've got to pay attention. We've got to rediscover ourselves, I believe. That's ultimately the only solution that there is. You know, it's got to come down to an individual level. There can be no leaders. And that's the problem with things like the Zeitgeist movement. As good as the intentions may be, it may have great ideas, but it's created a structure whereby, okay, now I'm a member of this movement. It's going to save the world for me. I don't have to do anything. All I had to do was sign up to this movement, and now whoever constructed the movement is going to change the world for me. Gee, why isn't it changing? You know, because you're not changing your perspective and you're not changing the way you interact with the world around you. There are no movements who can save you. There is no silver bullet. The silver bullet is for you to rediscover who and what you are and change the way you deal with reality around you and change the way you deal with the people that you come into contact with. Because they're all just as perfect as you. Where's the problem that you have with these people? It all comes from these fictional parameters that we're given. And they're all fiction. You know, so to me, that's the secret. It's so simple. It would be so simple to change this reality if people simply change their perspective of what they are. And that's why I've harped on with this same message for the last 6 years. I mean, every radio show I've done, every film I've made has basically said the same thing in a different way. Because when you find this solution and the answer, it's so clear that that's what the answer is, and there could be no other answer. Where do you go from there? What's the point of beating around the bush? That's the solution, you know?
I agree, Max. I can't see any other way out of it. Just to do it with your own two hands and your own heart and your own mind, which are the only things that you're ever really truly going to own while you're on this planet. That's all you can use to change the world. You can't, I don't think it's possible to make this huge shift by doing it externally or trying to, like you said, hopefully someone fixes the whole thing for you and we can see you doing what we're doing and it'll all get better. It should be right, mate. Like that's a strange thing.
Yeah. You've got to lead by example in what you do. You know, you've got to lead yourself. Everybody's got to lead themselves and it all comes from respect. If you can respect yourself enough to respect other people, the world will change. Because you will change the way you interact with the world. You'll create ripples in the people around you. Just lead by example in all that you do. Be a pleasure to be around. Always ask yourself, are you the type of friend that you would want to have as a friend? And always live your life in that way.
Well, you know, one of the other hosts on this network had quoted Abraham Lincoln a couple of weeks ago, and I can't remember who it was, but he said, "When I feel good, I do. When I do good, I feel good, and when I do bad, I feel bad." And that's my religion. And that just seems so simple and basic, but it's so profound at the same time. I mean, it made so much sense because we do broadcast outwards. So if you do good, you feel good, and then that projects out into the universe. And if you do bad, that feels bad, and that projects into the universe.
Well, yeah, you know, what I do to someone else, I'm really doing to myself. If I profit from you, I'm profiting from myself. I'm holding myself back. You know, if I, you know, limit you being all that you can be in any way, I'm limiting my own potential. You know, I really believe this. You know, in Lakesh, I am another yourself. We are all each other. And our natural state is a state of abundance, and our natural tendency is to give to one another. And we've been led away from that. We've been caught up in a position where we have to pay to be alive. So our basic instinct in life is to exploit one another for personal gain. We have to do it. We're forced to do it. We all do it because we have to, because if we don't, we starve to death. That's the society that we've got. We've got to draw the line somewhere. And even though we've got to make enough money in order to still put food on the table and have a roof over our heads, we've got to be able to give to each other as well, you know, because the necessity of pain to be alive has caused us to turn away from our natural tendency to give. It doesn't allow us to give because time is money. You know, if I give my wealth to you, I may be in a state of shortage down the track. So it puts me in fear. Just the action of giving to you can put me in fear. I mean, how wrong is that? How perverted is that? That we would have created a society that would put us in fear if we experience our natural tendency to give. That's a real problem that people need to look at. And, you know, we need to change our perspective of who we are and what we are and we need to stop profiting from the people around us. We need to start working to build powerful communities so we've got the strength to stand up in unison against those public trustees who are currently in power, who are abusing their power and who are milking the wealth of this planet for their own psychopathic enjoyment. Ultimately, that seems to be what it's all about. It's just so that these people can revel in the wealth and decadence that they enjoy. And they enjoy inflicting pain and hardship on others, obviously, because look at the state of the world. And I think we need to pay attention to this and do something about it. But you know, it's only going to come from empowerment of the individual and respectful, responsible, and compassionate, caring, united communities. I think we've all got it within us to do this. We just have to, you know, change our perspective of what reality is. And that's ultimately the only solution that I can find. And I've looked down this rabbit hole for a long time. I've wanted people to point the finger at. I've wanted to know who we can just arrest and put in jail and appoint a new leader that's going to fix the world. And I've come to realize that ultimately it's a personal problem. It's a spiritual problem that we're facing here. You know, the problem is ultimately that we've forgotten who we are because we've forgotten how to respect ourselves. And it's caused us to disrespect everything, really, each other and the planet. So that's the solution. That's where the attention needs to be focused. Hopefully we'll see more of this in the alternate research community and in the alternate research movement. Hopefully more people will begin to come to this realization and focus a little bit on this. Because I think it's important that we do focus on solutions. I think there's far too many people that are maintaining the fight and maintaining a vested interest in the fight. I would personally like the fight to be over. I'd simply like us to rediscover ourselves and implement the change, because I think the change could come about very quickly. I think it's a very simple change if we would simply pay attention to ourselves.
You know, somebody once told me, when you point the finger at someone else, you're pointing three at yourself. And I think that what he meant was, ultimately, it always comes back to you. You know, everything. So point the finger or look well, inward at yourself first.
It does. I mean, they create these regulations, but we comply with them because we believe it's real. But it's just paper. It just exists on paper. It's not real. It's just words people wrote down on pieces of paper. There's only one law. And that's the law of the Creator, which is do no harm. So if any legislation's been put in place which conflicts with that law, well, the government's broken the law by introducing legislation which breaks law and does harm. So it's just down to your perspective. But, you know, we're disempowered. We don't think we can hold these people accountable. And very often we can't, because we attempt to do it on our own, because we live in divided communities, because we judge ourselves by all these fictional parameters. See, it always comes back to this, you know. That's the thing. Yep. It's always got to come back to community. It's got to come back to people changing their perspective of themselves. That's how we change the whole thing. I firmly believe this.
And as we're disempowering them and empowering ourselves, it's a lot more free time that you'll have to spend with your family and your friends and do the introspection into yourself. It's an enjoyable process. And that's
you get to experience your life, mate. That's the thing. You're not running on the treadmill all the time, you know. So, you know, I think we're getting there. I think we will get there. They can't succeed in what they're doing. They never will. Even the whole nanotech and transhuman thing, I mean, it's becoming exposed now. The chemtrails are, you know, they're becoming pretty obvious to people. There's a lot of people talking about it. Even with what Dave's doing, David Icke in the UK with the People's Voice TV station, this is taking it to a new level as well. So, you know, there's a lot of people that are coming on board. There's a lot of awareness growing in the public. Just the fact that we're doing radio shows like this. I mean, a lot of people are waking up, and a lot of people will continue to wake up. As long as those in the truth community who are awake, those in the alternative research community who are awake, continue to respect each other and continue to work to bring about some type of unity, then things will work. I mean, don't buy into the personal attacks. It's hard not to. I mean, I've done it myself, but, you know, just don't buy into it. It's to be expected. There's going to be people out there that attempt to discredit anybody who starts bringing truth and empowerment to people. So just ignore it and just keep going and continue to lead by example as much as you can. Continue to empower the people that you come into contact with, and we will make a difference. I mean, don't show any fear to the powers that be. They're just public trustees. They don't hold any real power. They only have the power that we believe they have. And personally, I don't believe they have any power over me, which is why I continue to do what I do. And that's the way it goes. I mean, I think it's not over yet. We've still got a big struggle and a big fight ahead of us. But as long as it doesn't lapse into violence and we maintain our composure and always speak the truth, I think the truth will prevail. And they can't really stop it, you know.
Well, you just said something that really struck home with me, which was truth and empowerment. And I don't think we say that enough. We say truth and that's it. And to me, truth is knowledge. Empowerment is action. So if you just stop at the knowledge, then you're not really we're not pushing forth any sort of ideas. So like you said, truth and empowerment, I'm really going to have to start incorporating that into my lingo.
Well, truth is empowerment. It really is. Mm-hmm. You've got to apply yourself. That's what I keep telling people. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to know the truth, but if you don't apply it to the 3D world you live in, well, you're missing the point, you know, because you're here to participate, so to get involved. Because, you know, if we all get involved, we'll change it really quickly.
Great point.
It's a good thing that to discover, to research it, discover it for yourself, and then share that information to everyone that you can. I think a lot of people get really hung up in what they're doing or what they're saying. They forget that they're talking to people, and they forget that they're talking to people that might not have a clue what they're saying, and you're actually, you know, you're rocking their world. And they get frustrated when people won't listen to them because, you know, they might have their voice slightly raised, or they might come off as a, you know, bit of a crackpot or something like that. But I really believe that you've got to take control of yourself before you go out there and try and take control of other people's minds as well. Like Max was saying earlier, it all begins inside of you, and then hopefully you can spread that message that you develop and what you find out in your discovery of the truth, to take that to the people around you, and hopefully they can spread it and spread it. It's like plant some seeds and let it grow.
Well, yeah, you've got to do that. You've got to do that, and you've got to lead people in a direction where they can discover information for themselves, because you'll never really be able to tell anybody the truth. You can only ever open the door for them, and hopefully they will discover the truth for themselves, because real truth is realized. It will never be told to anybody. Now, it's that moment when the penny drops. It's a personal thing. So the best we can do is to provide the steps that people need to rediscover themselves and rediscover the truth of themselves. That's the best we can do. You know, and again, you're absolutely correct in saying that you're rocking their world, because when people do discover the truth about how the world is run, it defies everything that they thought was true about reality. And that's what you're doing when you're really bringing this to people in a passionate way. And you're forcing it down their throats. What you're asking them to do is to change their entire perspective of reality up to that point. You might be talking to some 30 or 40 year old person who's spent the last 40 years believing this is what reality is, and you're challenging everything they believe to be real. So it's very, very confronting for people. So the best thing to do is to plant seeds, and to do it in a way whereby people find the information empowering when they do discover the truth, and lead them in a direction where they understand that now we have a problem, but because I know there's a problem, now it gives me the opportunity to deal with the problem. I'm not lulled straight into fear or moved straight into fear. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that do that. They just go out there screaming, fear, 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 new world order, tyranny, 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 and everyone goes straight into fear. And they want to buy a gun, go and lock themselves in their closet and wait for a financial crash and for Homeland Security to come and kick the door down so they can fight it out. You know, and that's the state that people are put into from discovering out, you know, discovering how the world works and finding out the truth about the world. And you don't want that. You want people to be empowered.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it is very empowering finding out this information, because there's a very, very simple remedy to the whole situation. If people simply rediscover themselves and start respecting themselves and their neighbors, that's it. There's the solution right there. You know, a strong community, there's 6 billion of us. I mean, you know, these people don't stand a chance. If we trust each other and believe in each other and respect each other, the whole system of control breaks down in one day.
Agreed, Max. I'd like to plead, like, come in on their level, plead a bit ignorant. So you see something up in the sky like a chemtrail. for instance, just use this as an example, and you point it out to somebody and you say, mate, do you know what that is? And they'll go, oh, no, I don't really know what that is, or that's a contrail. I said, well, that's been hanging around there for the last 2 hours and it still hasn't gone anywhere. I really don't know what it is. What do you think it is, mate? And you'll say, I don't know, but maybe you should look into it, or we could look into it. You find out what you can find out, and I'll find out what I can find out, and we'll swap notes on the matter. And yeah, well, you know exactly what it is, of course, but he's going to find his own way there.
Well, yeah, any sort of approach. I mean, anything you can think of that works, that serves to get people involved and serves to help people notice what's going on around them works. I mean, whatever you can find that works, I approve of, you know.
Well, we'll just sum this up. We've got 2 minutes to go before we're out. So basically these solutions to all of these problems that are global really start off inside of you. And hopefully you can shed them to your neighbours and to the guy down the street and to your neighbourhood and your town. And onto your state and your country, and all of a sudden these solutions are global. I can't think of any other thing that's going to work. If we try and pick up weapons and form armies and try and fight these people, they're well too equipped for that, and they're sort of hoping on that too. I think I really believe that they're waiting for us to pull the trigger, and that will give them every right in the world to bring in martial law, and we don't want to see that happen. So you just go about your day. Be aware, tell people, but don't let it drag you away from your day-to-day life and looking after yourself. You must prepare yourself spiritually if that does happen. If they do come down and they do bring this stuff in, you know, it's good to tell people about it, but, you know, are you prepared for it? Have you taken the time out of your day to get ready for that and leading up to it? That's one thing that I'm really trying to get across to all these people I talk to lately who talk about, yeah, growing gardens is great, mate. But that's not going to stop the tyranny machine rolling up my driveway and kicking in the door.
Well, no, the only thing
see what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah, well, the only thing that's going to stop that is an empowered community. That's the thing. That's why the focus needs to be there. The focus needs to be on people rediscovering who and what they are, so they can connect with their neighbours. Because if you've got a strong community, then no one's going to drive up anyone's driveway and kick anybody's door down. Because the whole community will stand up against that, you know. An empowered community can change everything, but this is why I keep focusing on respect, because once you've got that, then you can get through this, you know what I mean?
Well, absolutely. Respect, love, compassion, these are the true ways out of this darkness, I think. I really do believe that. And so I send my strength, my compassion, and my love to everyone that's listening to us right now, and to Max and to Craig. And thank you very much, Max, for giving us 2 hours of your life. I know you're a very busy man. We appreciate it greatly.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Max, for coming on and connecting with our audience and our listeners tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking me on, guys.